Hi, it's me.
And it's me.
And this is Medium Roast.
That's right. We're back. Medium Roast episode...
Four. Four episodes in. Did you know we have listeners in Puerto Rico?
I did. We have, it's like 14% of the listening base.
It's like 8%, but, you know, close. Yikes. But I appreciate you knowing already, man.
Of course.
How you feeling about our guest today?
I'm really excited about our guest today.
I'm also excited about our guest today, because, you know, lights.
Lights.
We all
right.
Turn them on.
That's right, Carlos. That is the topic of today's episode.
Yeah.
We're talking about lighting and designing lighting for stage performances, concerts, anything that needs big, bright lights.
So does that mean, like, I turn on a lamp and am I an artist?
I think we'll figure that out.
All right. Let's learn then. Dun, dun, dun. Just kidding. That would be singing.
Every time.
So, today we got Ethan Weiser joining us. He does lighting for the Broadberry in Richmond, as well as various festivals around Virginia. How are you doing today, Ethan?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing, Carlos?
Well, you should have listened to the intro. What got you into lighting?
Well, it was something to do in high school. Wasn't very good at sports, and so became the vice president of the theater club in high school, and wasn't very good at that either. So I did the tech and helped out backstage, built mediocre sets, but really enjoyed it.
Okay, so this started not as something like you were dying to do. You just kind of did it and got good at it.
Yeah, I mean, what junior or sophomore in high school knows exactly what they want to do for the rest of their life? But I had an idea that I was interested in it and took it as far as I could.
At what point were you stepping back away from it and you were like, this is special. I want to tour across various festivals in Virginia and East Coast.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of old drawings from when I was a kid of like being a rock star, and I can't really play an instrument worth a shit. So the idea of being behind the scenes and still being a part of that atmosphere was always appealing. Sometime like sophomore year of college, I almost dropped it all and became a park ranger. But then sort of found this outdoor festival work, and that's really the best of both worlds. And camping and seeing shows and doing that sort of work.
All right. That's cool, man. That's cool. Like,
look, this is all great. But I have some hard-hitting questions.
Let's hit it. Let's do it.
Art medium roast, baby.
Some real journalism.
We're here to roast some art mediums, okay? So, you're doing lighting design.
Absolutely.
You're positioning these lights, or do you choose the colors? Like, are you setting up that kind of stuff in a control panel?
All of it. So it depends on what lights you have, but there's also different consoles you have, which are how all of these consoles are hooked up to the internet, and that's how you're controlling them during the show. The big difference between like the work I do theater-wise and concert-wise is theater is all very cue to cue. You program every tableau and scene, everything that's approved by the director, and you just hit space bar, go, next scene, go, next scene. But when you're doing concert lighting, I program different movement effects, different color effects for all the various feelings that you feel at concerts all the time, and just sort of pick the moment. And it's called busking or punting, but you just use
slang
terms. Yeah,
insider slang.
That's it, really. And so I just have a lot of generic effects, and depending on who's coming in, metal band, folk band, I'll choose effects accordingly.
Let's say me and Ross here. Hey, Ross, you want to start a band?
Yeah.
What lights are we getting? Imagine the music we make. No, that's a little subtext. You need to know us.
Yeah, you know? Do you want me to plug you guys right here?
All right, me and Ross start a folk band. What are you doing?
Folk band? All right, well, there's different things. So, there's two specific kinds of lights. You've got LEDs and you've got warmer incandescents. Those might be like... I don't know, everyone knows those words, but like everyone knows the difference between a light that looks super cool or blue versus something that's warm. You can feel the warmth from it. Your incandescent is something that's like that. So for folk bands, you don't need a lot of flashy like disco balls, like strobing effects, like something you might see more with like DJ lighting or something along those lines. But you see a lot of really warm colors, earthy things that make you feel warm and at home with bluegrass, because it is a very like generational music, or like I said bluegrass, you said folk. They're in the same family, but it depends which. Fleet Foxes might be more of a light show, you know, because they're a bit more indie, you know, and there's more going on. It's not just like a stand-up bass player and a banjo and a guitar. They're a bit more dynamic, so it is really on a band-to-band basis.
Now, how much of a skill thing is there? Like, how much work did you have to put in to feel like good? And what was like the moment where you were looking at where you were doing a show and you thought, damn, I'm like good at this?
It really, like, the more I got into it, the more I realized it's not something that's incredibly difficult. If you like understand music, like if you go to shows a lot, you know when choruses are coming, like, you know, you can anticipate like jams and breakdowns and like certain things coming up. And so if you're familiar with that kind of a schedule, or I guess how a show might break down, once you're familiar with the software and like actually like remembering where your effects are and what effects do what for an audience, it's not a terribly difficult job to feel out that mood and know a chorus is coming, something exciting, and you can give something, someone bright, something uplifting, or if something somber, someone's doing a slow jam, something more melodic, you can really bring the mood down and show ambient noise through the lights.
You're obviously setting up the lights like that is supposed to supplement whatever's being performed and like just increase the mood that's already supposed to cause. How would you, is lighting design entirely dependent on that performance? Would you say you could create something that is just lights and still make that a good visual?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that's just because of our long associations with color, and the large impact that color can have on people and their moods. Certain tones of green, like if you're exposed to them for too long just by themselves, you'll feel sick. You can go see a show and it doesn't matter what they're playing, but if you're like completely enveloped in like some sort of a bright, cheery light, either it's going to give you two moods. One's bright and cheery. One of them is just like harsh and honest. You can see everything around. There's no getting around that. It's hard to give off the opposite mood when you're doing that.
No, yeah, I get that. So when it comes to like, what, is there any thought that goes into like, oh, I'm doing lights for Wilco, I'm going to make them blue. Like, what is the thought process sitting down with music when choosing what colors?
A lot of it is really subjective of how I feel from like the first few strums of a guitar, or like how a song is starting to go, or if a band is more prepared, they'll give me a set list, and they'll break down color and mood. I was at the Broadberry and BJ the Chicago Kid was here recently, and they were very thorough. You could tell they had been touring for a while and like knew what someone like an LD who works in a venue and isn't very familiar with the music, what they would need. So what I got was a 2-page set list with like brackets around songs telling me what was more of a party mood, what was more of a somber mood, what was sexy, like what the mood that they were trying to invoke was with that song. And that's very helpful when I'm coming in completely blind and like not knowing anything about an artist. But a lot of times you don't get that. Most of the times you don't get that. So it's just judgment calls, you know?
So you've been working on shows for like a hot second now, a couple years. Any opportunity where you were playing a show? Is playing a show even the right way of putting it? Like, doing lighting for a show, I guess? Thanks for laughing at me. And you looked at the situation and you were like, I'm just really bungling this up.
Yeah, you definitely have on days and off days. The goal is to not be noticed. You know, if people are If you've got a light with a data issue, like a light doesn't have an internet signal that needs one, it'll start turning purple and flicker and flash around because it does nothing's telling it what to do. And so if people see things like that, if you haven't built your stage properly, that can be embarrassing. That's a bad show. If in the middle of your headlining act, you realize that you haven't put things together properly or you missed a plug here or there, and because of that, something that is supposed to be the light on your main artist is flicking on and off, and everyone's looking at the main artist and they just know that the lights aren't working and there's no other way to be around that. So
it's when you run from the light booth,
yeah,
and disappear for the night.
No, you run on stage, you throw down a ladder in front of everybody and you fix it, and then you go back like nothing happened.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Damn. I mean, the show must go on.
What's the biggest crowd you've had to put a ladder in front of?
So this wasn't, I held the bottom of a ladder. We were at Floyd Fest last year, is my first year. And Greta Van Fleet came in to the stage we were working at, and their lighting designer said, this front wash isn't going to work. You can't see the band. It's not positioned right. We can't see Jake and the boys. And so, the crowd is already completely filled in. Greta Van Fleet should not have been on the second stage at Floyd Fest, but it was full. It was packed. It was fun. But all these people were here and we had to get up on a ladder and fix the front light, refocus all of it. So my boss climbed up on the ladder, probably above 10,000 people. I just held the bottom of it so it didn't shake on him while he fixed these lights. We got him positioned and the show went on.
Damn, man.
He played.
Brave.
I didn't do anything.
Courageous.
I just held a ladder.
Well, you did like physically sort of what we do in the audio world.
Yeah.
Stand in front of a crowd of...
You think we're metaphorically holding the ladder?
to art forms.
We're kind of the
ladder to the art form.
You are the base. You're propelling these people. You're putting these mediums in the spotlight for other people to.
This sounds incredible.
Enjoy and learn about.
Why did you start this conversation?
I just wanted to shine some light on us for once.
Oh, quick self ad.
Happy to help.
I definitely don't get enough light shine.
If we don't have ads yet, you might as well put some in for ourselves.
You're right. So you should stay tuned for the next part of this episode.
Which is now. Welcome back to the show, Ethan.
Here we are. Welcome back to Medium Roast.
What a great time to be alive. The second part of the lighting episode of Medium Roast 4.
Sure am happy to be here.
Thanks, man. So, by the way, how do you like the coffee?
The coffee is wonderful. Thank you very much.
It is a
medium roast.
Ooh,
woo!
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
All right. So, Ethan, lighting.
Yeah.
What is the event that you are most proud of as a lighting? What's even the term for your job?
Some people call it lighting designer. Some people call it lighting director. I think the director, if you're getting specific, is in charge of a crew that builds something large, like maybe a lighting director would be in charge of the Olympics.
Okay,
you know, something where there's a lot of different designers working in different areas. But
do you feel like there are some shows where you are a designer and some shows where you are a director?
For the most part, I feel like a designer. And the only time I ever feel like I have crews to like boss around are if I'm like working in a union house or I'm working directly with a band, because then you're you have the expertise of how that rig goes up. You know what plugs into what. You've done it before, so you have these hands that are just labor, and you use them how you see fit to get the show up and running in a timely manner.
Damn, you ever burn your hand on a hot light bulb?
Sure can. Yeah, that'll
or have.
I sure have. Yeah, no, I've burnt the shit out of my fingers before. Some old strands. Those lights have been around since the 70s. Those things. Those are some hot son bitches.
See, kids, like, shows like this, kids and adults, this is a podcast for everyone.
It sure is, Carlos.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel like with shows, there's a lot more that goes into it than people understand. And, like, I just saw Charlie XCX, like, 2 weeks ago in D.C., and the lighting was, it's just her on stage, so that, like, you gotta make it entertaining somehow, because it's just one...
Right.
For a whole venue, one person can only, like, fill up so much room.
Makes you wonder how people like Taylor Swift or people that are just, like, one-person singer-songwriters, you know, and they're having these huge stadium shows, like, what's filling that space? For Taylor Swift, it's 27 trucks of, like, I don't know the exact number. There's a whole documentary about how much production she travels with.
God.
They have like three different touring rigs that they'll build at the next site so that she can come in and go to the next stage and have it already built, because it's so big they can't afford to actually move one rig to each one of her venues. There's three of them that travel. They build two ahead everywhere she goes.
Jesus.
I find it interesting that like as an artist gets bigger like that and they're considered more and more talented to go along with that, that like I get the production value increases, so you're going to have the opportunity to make those bigger sets, but also it feels like as people get bigger they're relying on the production more.
It's I think that boils down to how difficult it might be to reach somebody in an arena the size of like Wells Fargo in Philly or Verizon Center in DC. Mm-hmm. Like once you're, when you're somewhere that's that big and you want to give someone an intimate concert experience, you can't physically reach these people. So you're at the mercy of your audio equipment needs to be able to reach them, be strong enough, powerful enough that whatever vocal message you have is worth a shit when it gets to them. And then you also want to have an environment where people feel ready to accept that message. You know, if you're sitting in like a Raritan Hall with fluorescent lights and Taylor Swift singing to you, it's going to sound like every other little redneck girl that's singing karaoke in your small town. But if you're in a stadium environment where you've got production, you've got lights, you've got things that are making you feel warm, things that are like shocking you, like disco balls and lasers that are exciting, you know, you're more susceptible to receive whatever message Taylor Swift's trying to sell to you.
I got you. Like, it's weird because, like, with the Broad, you work the Broadberry fair amount.
Yes.
And, like, some, like, pretty sizable acts come there every once in a while.
Yeah.
How much of an operation is it to, like, because, like, there's a lot that goes into making a show a good show. How much are you doing? How much of a team is working on the stuff during the night? Excluding stuff like bouncers.
Here's the basic layout of the show is a band will, they'll give us a time where they show up. And it'll be all hands on deck to unload them. That'll be unloading all their merch, audio equipment, instruments, lighting if they have it. Typically they don't at the Broadberry, but every once in a while people do bring in like full lighting packages. And then it's set everything up, all the audio equipment up. There's two usually house audio guys at the Broadberry for every show that comes in. You got one person on stage helping out with anything that needs to get fixed, including on stage monitors so the band knows how they sound. And then you've got, an audio tech that sits sort of in the middle, and he makes sure it sounds good for everyone out in your audience. So once you set everybody up, then they sound check, make sure everything sounds good. And then you've got a small period of doors where everyone can eat some food, relax, maybe drink a little, whatever they need to get ready. And then showtime. And then strike it all as soon as it's done. Pack it all up. Put it back in the van. Get everyone out, hopefully before 4 o'clock in the morning.
So, you get paid well for this?
No, not at first. The first year I did a lot of like really free work, going to a lot of festivals for free, just kind of paying for like my spot in the woods to put a tent and like the only enough food to make sure I didn't die throughout the festival. But now they know that they can pay me and I can do a job well. And so like Floyd Fest, it's a 7-8 day time investment. But I'm taken very seriously. I'm the lighting designer in the beer garden there. I walk away with a nice paycheck. It's worth the time.
Oh, man. Mr. Big Bucks working for festivals.
Art making money,
look
huh?
Look at that.
Making Ooh. Enough to live.
Hey, turning on the lights.
So other kinds of lighting design. You told us while we weren't rolling for a second that... like, you know a lot about other kinds of lighting design outside of concerts and even, like, theater. What are other things that you could be designing lights for?
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far to say I know a lot about other things
of
lighting design.
Hey, we hype up our guests here.
No, Ethan knows everything.
But there is a lot. There's interior design, lighting design. Like, there's a lot to be said about the lights that are just in rooms that are supposed to make you feel welcomed or energized or, like, just different moods that different rooms are supposed to have. And then you've got lighting design for specifically art exhibits. So then you are dealing with, like, you're like getting really interested in like the temperatures of the light because certain kelvins can be damaging on art and all the different ways you can display art without, again, taking away from what the subject is supposed to be, but still supporting it similar to what you would do in a concert setting. You know, you don't want to put on a show maybe that distracts from the performer, unless the performer wants you to put on a show that's more important than them.
Okay. Now, you said that, like, you were talking about how lights can influence the rooms and how they feel. Like, what are your strategies when trying to tackle certain moods? Like, let's say a sad act is playing, or you're watching a hardcore band and it's really angry. Like, what goes into tackling these different types of moods and genres?
Well, you play to what people know, like familiar, like, motifs and themes that people are aware of. Like, isolation is a big one, you know? Like, if you've got a full band on stage and a bunch of equipment, it looks really dramatic to single out one person on stage, you know? So you can really take the visible noise from big spreads of, like, blue and purple lights and flashing signs, and bring all that visual noise down to, like, isolate one singer. And then everyone there is waiting to see what was so important that everything changed and now their focus is on them. You can really, like, draw people's attention that way. When you control the lights in, like a big space like that, any sort of specificity and isolation is, like, that's all everyone's seeing. Like, the one thing you're told when people are teaching you is, like, what's the brightest thing on stage? Because that's what everyone's gonna look at. No matter what, every time. Doesn't matter if it's a disco ball in the corner that's reflecting light and it's not supposed to. If it's the brightest thing up there, it's all everyone's going to see.
Little did they know that in a room full of lights, the brightest guy was behind the board.
Oh. Medium roast.
Medium roast. So, Ethan, I appreciate you coming out and talking about lights.
I appreciate you having me.
No, love having you, man. And I wanted to end this interview with the best experience you've ever had lighting a stage and, like, what that moment was.
Oh, that's difficult. I've like, I could sit and name drop, like, shows that I've worked on, but I didn't have any really real responsibilities on. I was packing trucks, so there's nothing impressive about packing a truck for Arctic Monkeys, you know, because
it's
It's not like I did anything but pack their van, you know? But
what were the Arctic Monkeys like? You obviously hung out with them.
Well, yeah. That was my very first, like, job with a celebrity and band, like, I knew. And I got to set up a lawn chair backstage and, like, watch the show after we'd built it. Like, my job specifically was to build all the truss that their lights and banner and everything hung on. But then I saw Alex Turner, like, he walked on stage and I was just frozen.
So you're best friends now.
I was so scared. I didn't talk to him at all. He stood as close as we're sitting right here and I didn't say a fucking word to him.
You didn't say, are you mine?
Nope. I was just too scared.
That was a funny reference.
That was good.
Arctic Monkeys, shout out. Hey, Wilco, Arctic Monkeys.
Arctic Monkeys, Joe.
We're name dropping.
What's the best one that you've actually worked on?
To Floyd Fest, really. The Virginia festivals have a large place in my heart. Rooster Walk, Red Wing, like, all of the people that run these festivals are incredibly talented, and I've been happy to work with them for, like, the past 2 years. And Floyd Fest, they take me seriously enough to let me be the lighting designer in the beer garden. I got to close out the festival this past year in Carl Denson's Tiny Universe. He's a saxophone player for the Rolling Stones. And that was just fun. It was fun. Name drop. Yep.
All right. I know I said lastly, but, you know, another question popped up in my head, and I said that a little bit prematurely. So I got one more question, man. You've told me that, like, you've been doing enough of these festivals that you sort of discovered a whole style of music and a whole scene that you were unfamiliar with. Tell me about that.
I just really never realized how incredible the bluegrass and Americana scene is in Virginia. Yeah. We are at the tail end of the honky-tonk highway, and that is very prevalent in all of the booking that happens at any festival around here. There's, like, some really, really great bluegrass, Americana, like, roots music going on that not a lot of people are familiar with, and that's one of the biggest takeaways I've had from working festivals around here, is I just really love bluegrass.
Well, if we're on a honky-tonk highway, I appreciate you for stopping at our place, man.
Thanks for having
me. There's always room for you.
Hey, I'm not ready to end the episode yet.
You got another question? I'm sorry. Once I see it go past 20 minutes, I'm like, we gotta end this thing.
Hey, I get that, but I have a little fun game I'd like to play with you, Ethan.
I'd love to play a game.
We love games here at Medium Reps.
We are episode 2, gamers.
Yeah, good episode.
Good episode.
Great episode.
And So I just wanted to say, I'm going to say a type of music to you. A genre of music.
Yeah.
And just I'm going to...
No, you're not. In a sentence, just maybe a couple words. Tell me like a little bit of what you think the lighting design would be for that performance.
Can I modify the game a little bit?
Apparently.
You say a genre. I say a genre. It's a fusion band. You got to set up the lights.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great.
All right, I'm in.
All right. You start, Ross.
First up, you know, we'll keep it easy. Bluegrass.
Blues.
Well, bluegrass and blues. It's funny, the blue is very evocative when you're talking about blues and sadness, you know. If you put something on that's a wash of blue across a stage with a couple different warm incandescents, something that's different from the LEDs on stage, those are gonna feel burning. They're gonna feel like homey, like we were talking about earlier, with which is what you look for in bluegrass.
Okay, so we tossed you an easy one there.
Yeah,
they both had blue
and warm.
We get it.
Oranges and blues. Yeah.
We thought we'd throw you
next up.
Real journalism.
New metal.
Reggae.
I'm gonna need a definition on new metal.
Limp Bizkit.
It's spelled Linkin Park. New. Yeah.
Wow. Like, all right. So we're just talking Soja, right?
Jada Pinkett Smith.
What lighting would you do for Soja?
Well, I've worked a Soja show before, and it was just a lot of green and reggae colors because sometimes it's the easiest thing, you know? That's what people know. That's what people are going to think of immediately. It works.
Name drop.
Name drop, first off. Pretty cool. Third off. All right. Well, we've been tossing you softies. We're going to give you a real hard one here.
Lay it on me.
Ross, hit him.
Smooth jazz.
Scam rap.
What is scam rap?
It's rap exclusively about stealing credit cards.
It's about stealing credit
all
cards?
All the songs are essentially like tutorials on how to steal credit cards.
All right, well, here's the scene I'm painting, right? So we invest a lot of money in LED screens. A bunch on the back wall, right? And we just put up YouTube tutorials of how to steal credit card information. And then since you got smooth jazz going on the stage, your lights shouldn't be anything too crazy. Nothing that's going to take you away from your obvious instructions on how to steal credit cards and the elevator music behind it.
Wow, okay.
Medium roast.
Medium roast.
Thank you for coming to the show again, Ethan.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
You may have won the game, but we won the war.
Wait, game and war?
Agree to disagree.
Well, agree to disagree indeed, Ethan. Thank you for coming anyways. My name is Carlos.
My name is Ross.
And I'm Ethan.
And I'm me, and this is Medium Roast.
Medium Roast.
Everybody!
Medium Roast!
One. And by the way, if you liked what Ethan had to say or need somebody to light your birthday party, bowling alley, bar mitzvah, or whatever the next thing is, you can follow Ethan Weiser at...
Ethan_Weiser.
Ethan_Weiser!
Spelled like the beer.
And I'm Rob.
Shout out Tito's birthday.
Medium Roast!